Not everyone likes the Bible. But even the fiercest critics of the Scriptures have to admit there are some passages in the Scripture that make sense. Some common sense verses. Tonight, we want to look at some passages. We start with the Old Testament. And we'll spend a considerable amount of time in the Old Testament that deal with some common sense passages. It is in the Old Testament as well as the New that we find some warnings about relationships. The first relationship passage that we want to look at comes from the book of Leviticus. It's Leviticus 18. Now, before I share this passage, I want to also remind us about some information regarding in Indiana state law. The state that we live in has some laws when it comes to marriage. We often hear people say, well, we should be able to do whatever we want. We should be free. We should be allowed to choose whoever we want to be with and all those kinds of things. But our state of Indiana says that it has some rules when it comes to marriage. If you want to get married in the state of Indiana, and other states are similar, there are some restrictions on the people that we can marry. Our state does not allow people to marry anyone closer to them as far as your relative is concerned than their second cousin. You can't marry your brother, you can't marry your sister, you can't marry your father. It has to be at least the second cousin as far as the distance. Now, there is an exception, as I understand the state law. You are allowed to marry your first cousin in the state of Indiana if you both are 65 years of age. I guess they figure at that particular time it's okay. But under 65, they say, no, you can't have your first cousin. So our law in the state of Indiana is very clear when it comes to being joined to close family members. Now, bearing this in mind, if you've turned back to Leviticus 18, let's see what we find in the first 9 verses, beginning with verse 1. And Jehovah spake unto Moses, saying, speak thou unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, I am Jehovah your God. After the doings of the land of Egypt wherein ye dwelt, ye shall not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do, neither shall ye walk in their statutes. Mine ordinances shall ye keep, and my statutes shall ye keep to walk therein, for I am Jehovah your God. You shall therefore keep my statutes and my ordinances, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am Jehovah. And then verses 6 through 9. None of you shall approach to any that are near kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I am Jehovah. The nakedness of thy father, even the nakedness of thy mother, shall thou not uncover. She is thy mother. Thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. The nakedness of thy father's wife shalt thou not uncover. It is thy father's nakedness. And then verse 9. The nakedness of thy sister, the daughter of thy father, or the daughter of thy mother, whether born at home or born abroad, even their nakedness, thou shalt not uncover. Now verse 3, which I tried to emphasize, is a very important passage. God there spoke about the doings, or the practices that were taking place in the land of Egypt. God said, you think back to what you saw, to what you witnessed in Egypt. You saw some things in this culture. You're familiar with some things that took place in this land that were contrary to my will. Much of the information in Leviticus 18 involves wrong or sinful relationships. Now, as we see, especially in verses 6 through 9, examples of these wrong relationships. And we go back to the doings, that word in verse 3. A little deductive reasoning tells us that there were in Egypt some situations or cases where close relatives were marrying one another. Now, I'm not sure exactly how close they were, presumably the first cousins, and maybe a little bit closer than that. The uncovering of a person's nakedness is a reference to a physical relationship. Israel saw those kinds of unions in Egypt, and they, God said, we're going to see them again. God said, what you left behind in Egypt, as you go over here and you enter into the land of Canaan, you're going to see some people. You're going to see some heathens or some pagans who are doing these very same things. And God said, I want you to know that these marriages, these relationships, these unions are wrong. So you make sure that the doings of Egypt, the doings of Canaan, you avoid these things. Then 2 chapters later, Leviticus 20, which we'll not read from, it's here that we find a variety of punishments. God told his people, if you become involved in these kinds of relationships, I will punish you. I do not permit these kinds of things. Today, when people talk about the kinds of relationships that we see described in Leviticus 18, the kinds of relationships which are absolutely prohibited by our state law, by the laws in virtually every other state, as far as America is concerned, many, as they think about these relationships, they just kind of shudder and say, ick. It grosses me out to think about these kinds of things. Well, we should say ick to these kinds of relationships. Our laws against marrying close relatives are good laws. And we need these laws for a variety of reasons. But sometimes people transgress these laws. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 1, you may remember that Paul said there was a man, presumably a Christian, who had his father's wife, his stepmother. So God's rules concerning relationships are not followed. There are problems in society. There are also problems in the church. Now, most of the people in our world are familiar with the kinds of things that I describe, and they're comfortable with them. They say that these laws are good. Shouldn't be allowed for a mother to marry your son and those kinds of things. But the Bible discusses some other relationships in similar terms. And with these related matters, we find that people are sometimes not nearly as enthused. They're not nearly as ready to accept these other things described in the Scriptures. You see, when we think about relationships, there are some other relationships that are prohibited, or some other relationships that are not spoken favorably of beyond marriage. If you turn back to the book of Leviticus, as I mentioned, we're going to spend some time in the Old Testament tonight. Let's move forward a couple books and see what we find in the book of Deuteronomy. It's Deuteronomy chapter 7. Now, in the opening verses of this chapter, God said, I want you to know, speaking to his people, there are some nations that are greater than you. There are some nations that are more powerful than you. So God, as he talks about these seven nations that were more powerful than his people, he said, I want you to be in a situation where you're warned, consoled, and comforted, because I have some promises. I'm going to help you. God said, I'm going to take care of these nations for you, but you also have some responsibilities. Let's start with the first two verses in Deuteronomy 7. Verse 1 says, when Jehovah thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and shall cast out many nations before thee, the Hittite, and the Girgashite, and the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Seven nations, greater and mightier than thou. Then verse 2. And when Jehovah thy God shall deliver them up before thee, and thou shalt smite them. God said you need to utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Moses told God's people that when it was time to go into the land of Egypt, or the land of Israel, they come out of Egypt, that they needed to destroy these people. They had some spiritual responsibilities, even though the seven nations were going to be mightier than they were. And this promise was a great promise, but God also, with the promise, issued a warning. You see, God knows how people think. And he knew as his people went into this land and they began to see all that was there, they would suffer some problems if they didn't do what was right. So he saw a great danger and he tried to warn his people in advance. Men and women are fairly predictable. You see some young men, even some older men, and they're put into a crowd, they're put into a group of people where there are some women that they find attractive, and they're probably going to start trying to communicate with those women. There's going to be an attempt to bond or attempt to create a relationship. The sparks are going to fly. And God knew that as his people, as they went in to where these Girgashites were and the Jebusites, as those men saw some of those pagan women, he knew that those men from Israel were thinking, hey, she might be a good wife. I want to go over and talk to her. Maybe she's going to be the woman that I marry. And God also knew that this was true for the women. As the ladies from Israel were able to get into the land and they were able to see some of the hunks there in the land, and they were thinking, well, hey, this is a hot guy. I want to go ahead and date him. Maybe he's going to be my mate. This is the guy I've selected for me. God knew that men and women in Israel would have these kinds of thoughts. So in Deuteronomy 7, verse 3, this is what he said. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. You go into this land, and you find these people, but God said you don't marry them. You do not let your daughter be married to one of the sons, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. God said when you go into this land, no matter if you find a man or a woman that is attractive to you from these seven nations, God said you do not marry these people. Now, why would God say that? Well, if we continue to read just one more verse, we'll find the reason. For, because, here's the reason why. He will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of Jehovah be kindled against you, and he will destroy thee quickly. The Hebrews may not have been tempted to marry relatives, as we saw from Leviticus 18. Maybe they learned from the Egyptians that that's not always a good idea. But God said, not only am I prohibiting you from marrying your relatives, your close relatives, but God also said, when you come into the land, you also avoid marrying pagan people. Now, this has been a great temptation throughout time. But God said, let me tell you up front, this is something I'm not going to allow. Now, we are far removed from the time of Israel. But as we look at the information in Deuteronomy 7, it still has a great deal of application for us, because the principle in verse 4 is still true. It's been proven true in my lifetime, and it's been proven true for thousands and thousands of years. In more cases than not, and I know that there are exceptions, but in more cases than not, a non-Christian will have a significant negative impact on the life and Christian life of a Christian mate. Now, I'm old enough to have heard, I think, most of the justifications that people offer for marrying a non-Christian. I've had people over the years say, well, I want you to know that, yes, I'm involved with this non-Christian, we love each other, and my fiance is not a Christian, but he or she comes to services with me. If it's not that, another person might say, well, we go to different religious groups. She has her church, I have my church, and we support one another. We love one another. It's just that we have different faiths. Another have said, well, you know, my fiancé doesn't oppose my going to a religious group and my being involved with the Christian life. Now, each of these statements might be absolutely true. I have no doubt that as people make these statements, that they are making these statements with absolute purity of heart. There's no intent to deceive. But you know the one thing that I don't hear from these statements? The one thing that is not found in similar statements is this person who's not the Christian that probably I should be looking for, this person is not doing all that he or she can to help me go to heaven. That's the case. That's the truth. When a person can't make that statement, that this person is doing all or he or she possibly can to help me go to heaven, then there's a problem. Then there's an issue. A spouse, a mate, the person that we marry, is not a neutral party when it comes to spiritual matters. Stated another way, if we decide to get married, the person that we decide to be joined to is either going to help us or hinder and maybe hurt us when it comes to living the Christian life. In Deuteronomy 7, God said this is true. So his people were warned. They were given a forceful message from Moses about mixed marriages. And some might say, well, you know, sure, this was Moses and it was just him. Probably nobody else ever talked about that. Well, Moses was a good man, and he led Israel for a long time. But like everybody else, he wore out. The time came where it was necessary to find a replacement. You may remember that Moses' replacement was Joshua. And we're now going to turn to the book of Joshua, towards the end of the book, and see what Joshua said towards the end of his life. He was an older man. He'd had a chance to see some things. He'd witnessed some of these mixed marriages. And now he comes, Joshua 23, verses 11 through 13, and has this to say about the very same subject that Moses commented on and talked about in Deuteronomy 7, beginning with verse 11. Take good heed, therefore, unto yourselves, that ye love Jehovah your God. Well, okay, that's plain enough. And then he says this in verse 12. Else, if ye do at all go back, and you cleave unto the remnant of these nations. Now, these were the nations that were supposed to be wiped out, Deuteronomy 7. He said, if you go back and you get involved with these people, even those that remain among you, and here it is, if you make marriages with them, and go in unto them, and they into you. Now, they weren't supposed to do that, but these people were still around, and Joshua says, if this is what you try to pull, know for a certainty that Jehovah, your God, will no more drive these nations from out of your sight, but they shall be a snare and a trap unto you, and a scourge in your sides and thorns in your eyes, until ye perish from off this good land which Jehovah, your God, hath given you. Verse 12. Just like Moses had spoken about many years before, verse 12 specifically talks about entering into marriages or relationships with people who were not part of God's family. Verse 13 specifically says involvement with these pagans was going to be a snare. It was going to be a trap. It was not going to be a healthy thing. Involvement with the heathens, Joshua said, it's going to be like a scourge upon you. And the people that you get involved with, it's going to be like a thorn in your eye. How long has it been since we've had a foreign object in our eye? Maybe it was small, a little speck of dust. Maybe it was something like a silver shaving. We know what these things are like. We know the pain and the irritation that comes from something in the eye. Imagine having a thorn stuck in the eye. And that thorn is stuck in the eye for a year or 5 years or 10 years or a lifetime. We'd say, this is unbearable. This was Joshua's illustration when it came to being involved with people who were not part of the nation of Israel. And Deuteronomy 7, Joshua 23 warn us. And again, there are exceptions. There are exceptions. But generally, the rule is that we become involved in a relationship that is, as I've described, and it is going to provide some difficulties, if not pain. The Bible is very clear on this point in the Old Testament. Long ago, there was a prophet by the name of Amos who made known a very useful principle. And you're probably familiar with it. It's in the book of Amos, chapter 3, verse 3. He said, "Can two walk together unless they be agreed?" The question is rhetorical. The answer is, it's not going to be a good relationship unless we're both on the same page. We need to both be headed down the same road, moving in the same direction. So when it comes to finding a marriage partner in our day and time, and we have a lot of people that are trying to do that today. Some of them are young, some of them are middle-aged, and some of them are in the later years. Do not seek the person who's the prettiest. Do not seek out the person who is the most handsome. Do not seek out the person who can tell the best jokes or the person who's the best cook. Do not seek out the person who is the smartest, the fastest, the cleverest, or the wealthiest. Finding a spouse is not about getting the most popular guy or the most popular gal in school. The number one quality should be in the spiritual realm. Is this person committed to Christ in the right way? Is this male, is this female trying to help me go to heaven? That should be the number one driving force behind our trying to find a spouse. If we find everything we think in a person that we want, but they lack this one quality, we're probably going to have at least some suffering, some pain, and maybe a great deal of suffering, pain, and maybe a divorce at some point. We need to be careful about our relationships when it comes to marriage. Our relationships outside of marriage, though, are also things that we find described in the Bible. And things that require close attention. We want to leave the Old Testament and turn to the New. Based on what's been said thus far, you might be thinking, well, Brad might turn over to 2 Corinthians 6 tonight. Well, if that's what you're thinking was, you're right. We are going to look at 2 Corinthians 6. Because it's in 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14, where Paul talks about being yoked, joined with someone. And here, not only does he talk about being yoked or joined with someone, he talks about being unequally yoked. When people think about being associated with a non-Christian, oftentimes they'll turn to 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14, and use this passage to say, well, a Christian should not be yoked or joined to a non-Christian. And there have even been cases where preachers have said that a Christian being joined or married to a non-Christian is a sin. Now, I want to be real clear on this point. I do not believe that it is a sin for a Christian to be married to a non-Christian. I don't think I've ever held that position. And tonight, I do not want to leave that impression. I do not believe that it is a sin for a Christian to be married to a non-Christian. But I will tell you, I believe this. I think it's very unwise. I believe it's unwise because of what God said in Deuteronomy 7. I believe it's unwise because of what we find in Leviticus 18. I believe it's unwise because of all the cases that we've seen in life. It's not sinful. But it's probably going to create a substantial amount of difficulty as a person goes through life. I also do not believe that 2 Corinthians 6 can really be applied to the relationship of marriage, and here's why. Let's start with the passage I mentioned, 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14. Paul's very clear. He says, "Be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness and iniquity? Or what communion hath light with darkness?" Well, 2 Corinthians 6:14 shows a contrast. He says, on the one hand, there are believers. On the other hand, there are unbelievers. We have righteousness and we have unrighteousness. And Paul says, these two things should not be yoked together. These two things should not be joined one to another. Now, if this is all Paul said, we might be able to apply this passage to marriage. But if you read just three verses more, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 17, notice what he says here. Therefore, the conclusion, come ye out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you. The relationships that are described in verse 14. As we look at verse 17, Paul says these relationships have to be severed. Well, if 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14 is talking about marriage, then 2 Corinthians 6, verse 17 tells us that these marriages would have to be dissolved by divorce. But this conclusion cannot be right. As we look at the 1 Corinthian letter, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 10 through 14, Paul there talked about a situation where Christians are married to non-Christians. He says, in these relationships, you maintain that bond. The unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife. There is no inherent sin in being involved or being married to a non-Christian. So Paul did not say in the 1 Corinthian letter, it's okay to be married to a non-Christian. And then when he writes the 2 Corinthian letter, he says, well, you have to get a divorce. You have to come out and be separate. It's sinful to be married to someone who is not a Christian. Marriage is not really the point that's under consideration. It's really something like idolatry and false teaching or false doctrine. God, as we look at Him and His Word, we find that God recognizes that in our lives we are exposed to a wide variety of relationships. Some of our relationships are based on friends. Some of the relationships that we have are business relationships, work relationships. There are also relationships that are built on a religious faith. If we're going to be involved with someone in the area of business, being involved with a non-Christian business partner is probably going to create some issues. If we think about religion, we certainly have no business in being involved with false religion. When a religion says that Jesus is not the Son of God, when a religion says that Jesus is not man's only hope, when a religion doesn't teach the truth when it comes to salvation or worship, well, we have to come out from among these groups. We can't have any fellowship with them. We think back to what Paul said in the 1 Corinthians letter, 1 Corinthians 15:33. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. Once again, it's a statement that's made in the context of false teachers, but the principle is still true in a variety of ways. What do we have in common with people if they're involved in a way of life that is inconsistent with the Scriptures? Well, we may have to have some contact, but that's probably not going to be the best relationship for us to go ahead and really explore, because that companionship is going to have a negative impact on us. We think, as far as practical terms, what if most of our friends and most of the time we spend with friends involves people who drink and swear, gamble, and cheat in various ways at some point? The principle from 1 Corinthians 15:33, Leviticus 18, Deuteronomy 7, these relationships are going to have a negative impact on us. What if we decide to start a business, and our business partner is someone who's a person of the world, and they lie, they cheat, they steal? At some point, these activities will have a negative impact on our faith. And such is also true when it comes to false religion. We allow ourselves, if we permit these relationships to be influenced in a negative way. I began this lesson by pointing out that there are some relationships which are wrong. And everybody seems to agree on that, or at least almost everybody. I've never found one person yet who thinks that a father should be able to marry his daughter or a mother should be able to marry the son. Oh, relationships like this, once again, we're back to the ick factor. These things must be avoided. So society, at least in some respects, draws a line and says these relationships are relationships that are wrong. They cannot exist. They cannot have our approval. God, though, goes further. God says the world draws its line here, but God says, I've drawn my line here. There are some other relationships God says that you need to pay attention to and avoid as we go through life. As we think about the relationships that we have in life, the relationships that we have with others, whether they're a close relationship or maybe it's a more distant relationship, they are going to either help us or hurt us. The relationships that we possess with others are going to push us further towards heaven, or they're going to try to drag us away from heaven. This is a message that we need to communicate to our young people. If we still have children in our homes, we need to teach them the principles from the Old Testament and the principle from 2 Corinthians chapter 6. And as they go through their school years, as they make their friends in the neighborhoods, as they make their friends in their first job, they need to remember that evil companionships corrupt good morals, and they need to seek a mate that has put Christ first in their life. And then, once we get married, maybe we have grandkids. It's at that time then we need to pay close attention to the relationships that we have. Christ needs to be the centerpiece in our lives. And from there, if we've got Him, we're looking, as the Hebrew writer said, unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, then we're in a good position to go ahead and make good and right choices about relationships. And it's tonight that we ask this question. Jesus, is He the centerpiece of your life? Are you building relationships in life with others that are somehow involved with Christ? If you are, that's going to help you have the best possible relationships in this life and be a way that will further help you towards your goal of heaven. But if your relationships are not headed in the right direction, your focus probably hasn't been on Christ. And tonight we'd like to help you renew that focus to get back to the point where you're thinking, looking at Jesus as the lens through which you make relationships and sustain relationships. Tonight, if we can help you as a Christian to better your relationship with the Lord, we'd like to do that. We're willing to pray with you, study with you, do whatever's necessary. If you have become a Christian and you're falling short, maybe it's something that you want to work out on your own, and that's okay too. If you've not become a Christian, He really is the thing that needs to keep you grounded and centered in life. And tonight, we'd like to help you become one of His people, if you believe. and you're willing to turn from the old life, the Bible says you can confess him as the only Savior of mankind, as the Lord of your life. And you can be joined with him by baptism. For as many of you as were baptized into Christ did put on Christ. Tonight, if you want to put on Christ and then to head in the right direction, we'd like to help you in that way as well. If there's a need that you have, we allow us to aid you in that and make that known as we stand and sing the selected song.